to put it out there in the universe, as cheesy as it sounds, it worked for me. And then also know that it takes time. I want to express that it does take time. Many people hear that story of me getting my mentor and just thinking that, oh, it happened overnight. And because now we're in the social media age where everyone sees highlights, it takes time.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Sterling White is the principal of Sonder Investment Group and all related entities. His mission when it comes to real estate is to help as many people possible and give them the push they need to create their own path to success. Sterling oversees acquisitions, development financing for multifamily opportunities, and other commercial projects. Sterling, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sam, for having me on. Everyone, go ahead. And I want you to get back because we're going to drop tons of golden nuggets. And you'll want to go ahead and scoop those up as we're going. Get your popcorn ready as well. We're going to take you along for a ride.
Hey, man, I'm looking forward to it. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on the show. Can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Oh, gosh. So I'll just go a little bit back to my upbringing. I'll give everyone like a spark note version. So born and raised in Indianapolis, similar to you, Sam, were you also born there too?
I was.
Yeah. So born and raised in Indianapolis, not so good parts of the city. East side, if you're familiar with over there, Midhoffer, Post Road. And every other day, I remember in one of the apartments that we lived in, and people would call them the projects, is it sounded like fireworks were outside, but it was actually gunshots. And with that is fraternal twin brother I grew up with, as well as a single mother. We were on welfare, food stamps, Section 8 housing, and luckily ended up getting out that environment. And one of the things is I had to figure out a way to earn money. And that's where the entrepreneurship came for me. But just fast forwarding through all that is got started in real estate 2009, where I was on the construction side as a laborer in my friend's construction company. And then shortly after that, I saw that the wealthy, they did not get that way by being actual laborers. So I started investing, bought 150 single families. My first deal was no money out of pocket, and then started buying multifamily. First deal was a 46 unit, and then the latest was 156 unit, and then scaled to 100, to just over 500 units.
Wow. So timeout, you said, all right, you know, which I think that's an interesting epiphany. When you're there, you're looking around and you're going, if I continue to do the same things everybody around me is doing, I'm going to wind up just like them, right?
Exactly.
It's like, do I want, and I think that's a common, like, if look to somebody in your industry and look at somebody 20 years older than you and say, hey, is that the person I want to become? Yes or no? And if it's not, then maybe like you did, you know, change your tactics. So you bought 150 single family houses. Like, that's no small feat. Why did you end up getting out of single family and then going into multifamily?
Because one, as you mentioned, is no small feat, and it's a lot of management, a lot of looking at deals. So it's just one of those very labor intensive, and was self-managing. So it was very labor intensive, had about 120 so in Indianapolis and about 30 or so that were in Dayton, Ohio. And it was just a lot of moving parts with that, and just took a step back and said, what model is even more scalable? And then that's when it made the most sense to start to transition to multifamily.
Man, that's crazy. All right. I don't want to spend too much time here, but I'm really curious because you divested yourself of all of those single family, no?
Correct.
Did you sell them as a package, or did you sell them off one by one?
Most were one-offs, and some of those were packages, and yeah, it was quite a bit.
Quite a bit. Okay, cool. I'm looking forward to really the next segment here. It's not, again, talking about no small feats, which it sounds like you had quite a few of these. Going from a laborer in 2009, buying 150 units. I mean, that's not a small mindset shift.
And that started in 2013. I was 23 years old and bought my very first single family. And then in that period of 2013 to 2014, that's when the single families were accumulated. And then that's when started to buy the multifamily.
Wow. Okay. What was the mindset? Like, I mean, I'm kind of like you in that, you know, I didn't maybe grow up in the projects, but certainly heard my fair share of gunfire. Grew up, you know, very poor. We heated our house with firewood. Like, I know what it's like, you know, to go, okay, and go without. I didn't know that there was such a thing as clothes that fit as a kid. I thought everybody's clothes were too tight, or, you know, gloves were too small in the winter. Talk to us about that. What was that like to overcome that mindset and go, hey, wait, I'm capable. I'm not just... Because, I mean, so much of we're a product of our environment. Yes.
I agree.
But there is also nature versus nurture. So somewhere along the way, there was somebody that helped nurture in you the ability that said, I can do more than what I've already done.
Yeah. And I love that you bring up the topic of a product of our environment, because my brother, we're twins, fraternal. He beat me out the womb by 2 minutes. And he calls me little brother. I'm like, are you serious? He ended up taking a different path in life from being a product of that environment. And I actually took a completely different shift. So the people you surround yourself with is true, because mother moved us out from the inner city to the suburbs. We were still in lower income housing, but we were no longer in public schools. We were in township schools, which are completely township schools are a lot better, completely different people I surrounded myself with. My brother went back to that environment and took the path and is facing hard time, unfortunately, due to the decisions he made. And one thing I want to mention is that I didn't have the best mindset growing up because I didn't have the right people around me. And I just had this very pivotal moment when I was at a college party doing what college kids doing, having a good time, all that. And I drift away from the crowd and I'm out in the middle of this canoe or boat, whatever the difference is between those two, in the middle of a lake or a pond, whatever the difference is between those two. And this question comes down to me and Sam and says, Sterling, is this what you want to do with your life? And I said, no. And then that's when my path really changed, as far as I started coming across Earl Nightingales, the Jim Rohns, the Zig Ziglars. And I literally had a lot of limiting beliefs and essentially garbage out of my mind that I had to remove first and then put the good into it. So that's what really helped with me, is having that pivotal moment, listening to whatever that voice was. I don't know who it was, higher being, God, whatever you want to call it, listening. And then the universe started to open up once I started listening to those individuals.
Man, that's fantastic. Were there any mentors, you know, outside of, you know, the people that we can see, public figures like Jim Rohns, the Zig Ziglars, things like that? Was there anybody that came in that was a more personal mentor to you?
Yes. And that was a person that was actually at the CrossFit gym that I was working out at, that I was bartering as a way to pay for the membership because I didn't have any money. And with that is that I established this relationship with this person and never thought they would be my mentor. And then just one day I approached him because I overheard he was a member at the CrossFit gym. And at that time I was training for a world record. That's another conversation in itself, but he was talking about doing construction and the build out. And just for some reason I said, well, I know Will. I asked him out to Subway and said, how can I be of value to you and your business? I want to work for you. And then he was like, I was like, you know, you don't even have to pay me anything. And then he took me up on that. Next day I was in his property management office helping out. And then another moment came that he said, well, I'm looking to buy some single families. He owned some apartments, but he was looking to diversify. Normally it's the other way, from single family to multifamily. And I said, this is perfect. Now it's just up to me to find the deal.
Wow. That's fantastic. What advice would you give to somebody who is looking for a mentor?
To put it out there in the universe, as cheesy as it sounds, it worked for me. And then also know that it takes time. I want to express that it does take time. Many people hear that story of me getting my mentor and just thinking that, oh, it happened overnight. And because now we're in the social media age where everyone sees highlights, it takes time. And that you may have to speak to multiple individuals, because I just happened to luck out, if you want to call it that. This person was older. They saw something in me and they decided to take me up under their wing. Some people just don't have the time or the bandwidth. I get approached with it. I'm like, I just don't have the time to be able to do that.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point there. You know, the time it takes. And especially in the social media age. And that's this business. This is not, I don't think, a get rich quick business. You can get some good licks along the way, but this is like all good things. It takes time.
Yeah. Get rich slow is what I would like to call it.
Right. Right. That's awesome. Talking about the get rich slow program or plan that we're on. I mean, what are some things that have been instrumental for you in kind of building your momentum?
Man, where do I start with that? One, it starts with mindset. That's the key thing. And just inputting as much as you can, because I had so many limiting beliefs. One, I didn't know if I would, the belief in myself, because I had on a daily basis people who I woke up to that said I wouldn't amount to anything. So that started with that. Wow. And then secondly, is that I had limiting beliefs that you had to have a good credit score, you had to have a large amount of cash. I'm 23 years old. How can I buy into real estate? It's an old man's game. So all these different things. So I would say it starts with mindset. That's really where I see most people get stuck. And then second is patience. Patience. Yeah. That those first couple of years, I didn't make anything. And luckily, I was able to live in my friend's den. And I had a side Amazon business as a way just to cover my overhead. And so there's that, just patience, knowing it's going to take time, not instant gratification. And then, man, I would say thirdly, systems and operations. Me, where I'm at now and looking back, I wish I would have documented a lot more of what I did. That way I can move faster moving forward. And then addition to that is focus to as quickly as I can on the highest value activities versus the lower value activities.
When you say documented, you know, your activities a little bit better, what comes to mind or how would you propose someone document their activities, you know, such that they could replicate it?
So from a tactical standpoint is opening up a Google Sheet. It's free to have a Google Doc, or let's say you're using your laptop and it's Microsoft Word, whatever particular process or task that you're doing is to actually, let's say, I remember each time I would go and raise money, both my partner, I would raise money for deals. The next time we would raise money for deals, we would have to think back, what did we do last time to do that? So that's a prime example that just documenting as you're going through the process. And this is another thing that comes with patience is that I'm one of those people that's go, 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 but now I've taken the time to now document, and you're essentially taking one step back to take 2 to 3 steps in the future. So as I'm going through something, whether it's new or whatever the case is, I'll document it, and it doesn't have to be 100% of the way, because there's different ways to actually document things, like open up the browser, okay, go to the login, enter the, but keep it on a high level. And then that will allow you moving forward to move faster. Or if you bring someone onto your team, everything's already there versus it just being in your head.
Talk to us about raising money. I know, you know, again, you've already told us you didn't come from a wealthy background. What was it like getting investors involved in deals, especially early on, maybe without a track record?
So one, it started with that initial mentorship, but then ended up partnering with someone who already had the relationship with friends and family, of which they had already started doing deals and having success, and essentially tapped into that relationship. So was using friends and fans cash to buy deals. And this was when started in the single family side. And then I was building, I was doing the marketing. So putting a lot of content, being on podcasts such as this, being a contributor to bigger podcasts is a way to generate interest from outside investors. And then we would take our original investors and then essentially cash them out with the new ones. And then they would earn a return on their money, the new ones that came in. And then we would just snowball that. And that's how we were able to scale so quickly.
Wow, that's awesome. When you think back, you know, along this journey, what have been some surprises or pitfalls that you've experienced along the way?
I would say is one is took multiple pivots when starting the company, and luckily did things that, or didn't do things I'm glad that, or things that came up, I'm glad that we didn't do, some vice versa on that. But we had someone approach us, and this was right towards the beginning as we were starting the company, and we had some deals that a venture capitalist that said they were going to fund this, but they wanted this control. Then they also want to bring on these partners, all this. So I'm glad we passed that up. Also, there were other regulations when we were considering the crowdfunding. We were thinking, okay, let's go ahead and partner with this other operator. And then also let's go through this regulation. So we had to take multiple pivots. So that's what I would say is that being willing, especially as you're starting your company again, that is going to take patience. And then what your original vision is that you may, depending on how the marketplace provides the feedback, that listen to the feedback and then be willing to make those pivots.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So you can never lose money on the deal you didn't do. And, you know, finding the, when your red flags go up for you guys, the VC partner going, maybe this didn't for us.
Yeah, it just didn't make sense. What they were saying is the original person we spoke to, they said, okay, I'll provide this amount of cash and I'll be the one that will be able to provide insights to you and help. However, I'm going to bring all these people along with me. It's like, well, what are you? It just really didn't make any sense. It was very fishy.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. That's wild. One of the things that you are known for is some creative marketing and bringing in, you know, sellers maybe on a more strategic level. Can you kind of break down for us what you do and why you do it and why do you think it works?
So I would say take the direct to owner approach when buying deals, because in 2017, things started to creep up in the market as far as prices going up. And when with bid on properties, people were bidding 10, 15, 20% more than what we would actually pay. So at that time said, well, why not go direct to the owner in this case? Of course, if the deal's listed with the broker, you don't go direct to the owner in that case. We build our own list. And then that's when we go the direct to owner approach. So from there is what I learned is that all is sales. Sales is everything. So an owner may not be interested today in selling their property, but then things do change. And by having different creative ways to follow up, that allow you to stand away from the crowd, meaning that most people follow up and say, now you're interested in selling your property. Now you're interested in selling your property. There's actual different ways how you can follow up. Send birthday cards. I'll send a list out to the list and people ask is, do you know their birthdays? No. They'll call me and I'll say, well, I just wanted to make sure. And I'll put that in the note in there. Just want to make, I may be a little bit early. I may be a little bit late. Just want to make sure I got you covered.
It's going to happen in the next 12 months.
Yeah, exactly. I should add that. It's going to happen either way in the next 12 months. So there's that as a way to follow up. I've sent Rubik's Cubes to owners and I'll now follow up with that. And I remember I was speaking with one owner. He says, my wife cannot figure out this damn Rubik's Cube. So hilarious. But you just think is while she's back there trying to solve that Rubik's Cube is he's thinking of the guy who actually sent it to him. So that's creative ways following up without following up.
I mean, what do you even tell them when you send the Rubik's Cube? Like, hey, here, happy Rubik's Cube day. I mean,
let's figure this out. It's more so the owners I've spoken with and they say I've submitted an offer to them and they said, well, I'll go ahead and think it over or they may be at this price. We're at this price. So that's why I'll send them the Rubik's Cube. Let's figure this out together.
That's hysterical. I mean, that's super creative, but it's also a lot to track. I mean, a lot of us want something that is a model that's scalable, repeatable, doesn't require a lot of hand touching. It's the, or hand holding really. But what you're telling us is that there's success in getting a really niche down list. I mean, you can't send Rubik's
exactly
to 1,000 people.
And right? That's what I was going to admit. It's different from the targeting because there's only a finite of apartments built between, let's say at that time, 40 units to 150 units that are C properties. So built around 1970 versus targeting a single family home list that may be 1,000, 5,000, 10,000. That's a lot more difficult to do.
Yeah, right. That makes a heck of a lot of sense and really gives some insight into just going the next step. You know, you're going to win deals over the guy that's just mailing out, you know, the same letter every month going, hey, I hope they have a reply.
So exactly. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Let's talk about some definitions, if you don't mind. Let's define success and then tell me, what does it mean for you to be successful?
Yeah, I would say success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal. That's right from Earl Nightingale. That's not my definition. But I would say as long as someone is constantly working towards a goal, then that is success. And what I mean by that, everyone has different measures of what success is to them. And that's one thing I've learned too, and not being, because as an operator, I'm so go, 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 go. But I just have to understand that someone may be okay with being a janitor and working their way up, or that just being a janitor and going home. Let's say they work 9 to 5 and just not have to worry about work and making $60,000 a year and taking home. So there's that. But as long as they're working towards some goal. So that's what I'm a firm believer of, what success is.
That's fantastic. I love that. Can you give that definition of success again?
Success is the progressive realization of a worthy goal.
Man, that's fantastic. Let's talk about impact. What kind of impact? Define impact, and then tell me what kind of impact do you believe you have on other people?
A great question on that.
You can edit here too, so take your time.
Yeah, I would say impact is making a into the universe So that's what I would consider impact, or making an impact into the universe, even though I'm still using the word in the definition. And what I would say is just providing inspiration. So one of the inspirationals, or how I wish to inspire people, is to show someone who was in that, or who is in that environment, that, hey, there is a way out. I was where you were. And sometimes I start to really feel this when I talk about this, because I remember growing up there and I did not know there was a way out. I didn't know what was outside of that. I didn't know about being able to travel to Dubai, Santo Domingo, Porter, all these different places, and that I was just going to live a modest life and not even live past the age of 18. So if I can provide someone an inspiration of, hey, you don't have to be a product of your environment. You don't have to deal drugs. You don't have to do this as a way to make it out, and be that inspiration that, hey, I took this path and this is how I did it. That's how I wish to make an impact.
Man, that's fantastic. Sterling, let's jump here into the final four questions. Certainly appreciate everything you've shared with us today. Your story, just talking about creative market or seller outreach, talking about, you know, taking deals down, financing, how to partner, red flags, things to avoid. You've given us a lot of golden nuggets here today. I certainly appreciate it. First question for you in the final four is, what is a resource you find you can't live without?
My laptop. I mean, or would that be considered a resource? I would say books. So I use this app called Libby, and it's just a database that is integrated within the library. So I use that as a way just to freely download books. Of course, you can, which I don't get it, it's a digital copy and you can only have it for a certain amount of time. you get wrong, but it is. But so that's what I would say. One resource I can't look. Well, let me go ahead and take that back. I would say Google Docs. Mm. So Google Docs and the platform Asana, because I've since shifted from using Google Docs to the platform Asana, where we enter all of our SOPs. So that's one resource I would not want to live without, because I live and die by the SOPs. And if I don't have an SOP or something documented, I will have someone on the team. And we, that's one of the things we first think of is, okay, well, we've got it down. Now I want you to go document it.
That's a great resource. Thank you for sharing that. If you could help the listeners avoid one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Raise, and please everyone put a star by this and also an asterisk. And then I'll talk about this at a later point, but is that to raise enough money to take care of renovations on a deal. And if the deal does not make sense for you to do that, then just to pass on it. And if you start to have the thought process that, oh, I can take this out of cash flow, red flag. Because I've learned, and they say, gosh, I forget what the actual quote is, but yes, it's good to learn from your own mistakes, but a wise person learns from others' mistakes. I heard this mistake, still made the mistake. It was like, man, this sucks. And so, and sometimes that still has to happen. So I would say, if you're moving forward with a deal, you're underwriting a deal, and it doesn't make sense to raise the money to take care of improvements, because of course it affects your cash flow to your investors and the returns, then just think of, if you're saying, okay, I can still figure this out, that there's a devil that's going around your head. And then if it's saying, do not do this deal, it doesn't make sense. That is me floating around your head like a little angel or something.
That's a hard-earned lesson. Thank you for sharing that with us. When it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
I would say telling my story and being as vulnerable as I can when it comes to that. And some people can really see the trajectory of me telling my story since 2013, when I started to be more open with it. So that's what I would say. And I've heard people at conferences that I've gone to, I've received emails and DMs and all that, that says, well, Sterling, you've inspired me so much. I was like, I'm just a guy just living his life, telling a story to the people.
Right, man. That's great. If our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what's the best place to do that?
Yeah. So you can visit just Sterling White Official. One more time, that is Sterling White Official. And then you can just shoot me an email anytime at sterling@sonderinvestmentgroup.com. And that is S-O-N-D-E-R investmentgroup.com.
Sterling, thanks so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen. If you can do that for us, That would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.